Well, it's a pleasure to welcome Chief Analyst for U.S. Markets and Cultural Trends at Elliott Wave International. Welcome to the show, Peter Kendall.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for having me.
Let's jump right into stocks and precious metals. Clearly, we've seen a lot of increased volatility in U.S. equities this year. It's caught some investors off guard, maybe the more seasoned veterans, less so as so many pundits have been calling the top on this market since the 2009 nadir. Give us your take, please.
This word volatility is intriguing to me. It's intriguing to me particularly with relation to two people that are using it just recently. I guess it's Jack Bogle, Vanguard Funds. That's another stalwart, longtime veteran. But it's so interesting to me that they use the term because I think a lot of times the word volatility is used for down. The market is going down, and so they say it's volatile. Because the market is always volatile. It's always going up and down, but it's only when it's in a bear market that they say, well, we should expect volatility. It's like they don't want to say what they're thinking underneath, which is we might be in further declines. So, and in fact, that's where we think we are. So I guess I'm thinking, well, maybe these guys are baffled by the decline. And why would that be? Because we think it's a bigger decline than these men have even experienced. They've been around a long, long time, and yet there's something different about this. And then the waves actually confirmed this. In the January issue, we showed a picture of what we call the throwover, which is right out of the textbook that Bob wrote with A.J. Frost back in 1979. In fact, in that book, he noted that he expected, in fact, in the final wave up, which is a cycle degree, it'll be the fifth of a fifth of fifth, you might get what is shown in the book as a throwover. Now, in the latest issue, which came out a few days ago, early April, we show that throwover, and we say, and we show the line that creates it, and we show that the market is now kind of has returned through the line as it described in the textbook and is now dancing around on that line. So it looks, you know, prototypically like what we would expect, in fact, right out of the textbook.
Let's move on over then to the precious metals. Things are looking up. We have very positive technicals across the board for gold. In particular, you might notice the interesting developments between paper assets and commodities. It looks like we are at a point where the pendulum could swing back in a much more favorable place for commodities relative to equities and related paper assets. Give us your take, please, on the commodities and in particular the precious metals.
I think it's possible that gold and silver will outperform the stock market, but it's going to be a relative thing. We do like gold right now. We think it's in but caveat is that it's still a bear market rally. The potential is there for it to rise, but we don't think it's a steep rise. I would say the high of 2016 was around 1400 or 1399. We can get beyond that, but how far, I'm not sure. The choppiness of the rise from the early part of 2017 to confirm that we're in a counter trend rally in a bear market, and we'll get a C wave that finish all that up before we can get rolling to any great extent in gold.
But have you had a chance to look at the data showing the astounding excesses in paper assets relative to commodities, which, of course, the precious metals fall into the commodities sector? When you see this differential, I mean, one wonders when we'll be returning to the mean. Have you had a chance to look at any of the fundamentals? Or are we just talking price?
Yeah, no, I'm not familiar with the fundamentals, but I could see the paper asset side of it, that's for sure. You know, the derivatives and the financial instruments that have become kind of derivatives of derivatives of derivatives at this point. I mean, futures started with the bull market in 1982 or 3 or so, and they just keep piling on one different type of paper on top of the other, of course. And then, of course, underlying much of it is a debt structure that is due for an implosion that gold will not experience because it can't. It's not paper. It's gold.
Let's talk about U.S. equities relative to gold. They tend to be negatively correlated, these two asset classes. Obviously, the love affair with equities remains intense. If the typical investor to start to look around for something a bit more tangible, a safe haven, there's a lot of topicality that would lead most investors to, you know, start searching for something a bit more solid when you start to hear about the potential for tariff and trade wars between our largest trading partners, not to mention potential conflict in Syria. Do you see a change in the themes and the typical investment themes that might be favorable for precious metals?
Well, we do see that change in the themes. The trade war is real. It will get more intense. The problem at least initially, that we have in, within this bear market for the metals, precious metals, and metals in general, is that we think we're going to have a period of deflation in which, you know, people just have to raise cash to settle their debts or whatever. So that there will be pressure on, we call it all the same markets. We think there'll be across the breadth of the financial markets, we're going to see deflation like we had in the 1930s.
That's counter to everything we see here at Goldsea. Worst case, we would see a disinflationary environment. If we were to expect something like the 1930s, that, of course, would be a rogue wave, if you will, that very few folks would be expecting. This would be a multi-sigma risk event.
The prime analogy is 1930, when Smoot-Hawley passed in May of 1930. So, in a way, our point is, well, guess what? This turn took place in January, and already, within 2 months, we're seeing a very serious trade conflict between the U.S. and China. Now, it took a full 6 months or 8 months. It was the market topped in September of 1929. So that's 3-4 months plus 6 months. So it's 10 months before they took substantive action. In this case, it happens almost instantly. We think that's a first clue to the importance of this turn.
Firstly, the United States, our entire economic situation is a complete 180 from the 20s and 30s. I mean, we were not a debtor nation at that point. Plus, we were essentially on a gold standard. You could easily make the argument we did not have a true fiat currency in place. So the thought of a deflation makes a lot more sense. From a purely notional derivatives perspective, interest rate sensitivity that we have, that takes deflation, tosses it out the window.
Inflation just kind of bails everybody out. Deflation makes them have to pay it back in more and more dear dollars. So it's kind of like, you know, that's part of why we think this is the reality is a deflationary reality, because we don't see where people are going to get out of those obligations.
From my perspective, it would be more of a disinflationary period within a tidal wave, even a tsunami of inflation. What we're in right now is de facto in the cryptocurrency market, the greatest inflation since the Weimar period, maybe even since Hungary right now. However, within any slow motion or the initial stages of a global fiat hyperinflation, the likes of which the world has never seen, you can have periods of disinflation, which is what we saw, I believe, and most of my colleagues, in 2008, 2009. So again, if we were to see another period of disinflation, it could appear as though you were in a deflationary period. You would likely see the U.S. dollar rally.
I mean, you talk about Bitcoin. That's kind of an asset price inflation. In fact, the greatest asset price inflation in history. We first talked about it in 2010. It was at 6 cents. It was in the Theorist, Bob's publication, and he said that. Bob's son wrote the piece, Elliot. He said Bitcoin appears to have enormous potential. We didn't talk about it too much. We talked about it here and there, and actually caught some of the different turns. And obviously, we all know what happened. It went to the moon. We got back into it really heavily in December of this year. We showed this, I don't know what we call it, an exponential curve. It just, in December, by December, it had reached the very end of the line for, in other words, it was about to cross. And we said that when it does, a breakdown in this bowl-shaped formation will lead to a Bitcoin bear market that results in prices in double digits. And that's exactly what we think is transpiring now. And in February, we showed it breaking the bowl, and we said this decline is on.
What happened with Bitcoin, unlike most projects on Wall Street, which are funded and, of course, underwritten by deep pockets, Bitcoin was the first to completely sidestep Wall Street. You have most of Wall Street, of course, receiving shares of potential projects and companies at pennies or even less than pennies on the dollar. And by the time it reaches the market, you see that Google maybe opens at $80 on the exchange and runs. We believe something similar happened with Bitcoin. Well, why don't you tell folks more about what you do?
Again, thanks for having me. I'm in Gainesville, Georgia. You look us up on the internet, of course. ElliottWave.com. It's all laid out there for you. Just give us a call.